This is Sylvester McCoy, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
APP Services, the Marzi at boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 467. I'm Adam and hungry, or at least I will be by dinner time on Tuesday. And here's Debbie Melrose.
He's a cowardly cutlet.
No, I'm not. Art. Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Real high for happiness.
Ian Bissett.
Oh, very well. But we only just got here. There's no sense starting to worry now. Sorry, I biffed there. Oh, well.
You got Robert Haynes.
Are these old ladies annoying you? Are you annoying these old ladies?
You would pick that one, and the next thing I'm going to say is Mary Lang.
You have just broken so many rules and regulations, it will take me several hours to enumerate them for you.
And Lillian Robbins says, you don't look like a talking tower. And Lee Anthony Davis says, hello. Hello, Lee. And I might have to get someone to keep an eye on what's going on the...
You said it in that voice?
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive on Facebook.
And it's... I'll refresh my page on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, which you can... I'm trying to talk a bit carefully at the moment because somehow managed to bite the back of my tongue, which... rather inhibit speech, to be fair. So if anybody can keep an eye on the shared link.
How do you bite the back of your tongue?
Well, it's back to the side, my left-hand side.
Yeah.
Don't know how I managed to bite it, but I have. I've caught it with the sharpie bit of my back of my tooth. And it's going to irritate me for the rest of the night. But I have taken some ibuprofen to try and settle down the inflammation. Lillian Robbins says, video says... Talking Paradise Towers as a title. Yeah?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
We're Talking Paradise Towers.
Oh, no,
have we ever reviewed Paradise Towers before?
I don't know.
I don't record of us doing
this. Kirby hasn't watched it.
I don't remember doing that. And before. Terry Miles says, hello, everybody. So
I have a spreadsheet with the episodes.
Have you? Is everybody aware of this?
I don't know that.
Now, when did you start that?
That's interesting, isn't it?
When did I start it?
Wow.
I don't know. You've never talked about it before, so I mean, this is
new. Well, that's the first bit
it
of...
It actually started as a list of the DVDs I had.
Yes.
And sprang out.
Yeah. So there's a bit of an exclusive there for the listeners and viewers of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast. Kirby, surprise, surprise, has a data sheet. Is it what it's called, Kirby?
Spreadsheet, yes.
Data sheet.
The spreadsheet with all of the stories that we've done.
Mm-hmm.
There's two parts to it.
I keep forgetting to look at it, you know. No offense.
There's the order by episode broadcast. And another one by podcast number order.
Anyway, episode one, Paradise Tales.
Is it on any of your lists?
Or Paradise Towers, no.
What? We have not done Paradise Towers before.
Okay.
Well, with any luck, we can get through it quite quickly. Woohoo. Right, so it begins with...
Why do you say that, honestly? You shouldn't do that. It curses them.
No. Because 2 hours from now, we'll still be...
He doesn't deserve 2 hours.
I'll give a bit of credit where it's due. The scenery for the Paradise Towers, which is probably the worst hotel in the universe. It's a leisure facility. It's a leisure facility. Anyway, let's put it bluntly. A yellow Kang, the last of, I do believe, gets killed. But I do like the scenery around her. The rather crude sort of graffiti of yellow Kangs and stuff like that. Quite good attention to detail on the scenery. Anyway, she gets done in. So we cut to the TARDIS, where Mel is getting all excited about...
Esther.
the prospect of the swimming pool.
Master.
Not bad, Kirby. We got 1 minute and 14 seconds.
The actress who played the Yellow King Andrew Cartmel suggested that she come to the read-through, and she went to the read-through just to do a single scream.
Andrew's terrific.
Yes.
There are good actors like that. They'll just show up to do their bit, even if it's the smallest of things.
I would. I think I would, just to be sat around the table and go, I was at the reading of Doctor Who.
I'm sorry, but it's like Richard Briers is in this. It's like, I can sit at a table with Richard Briers with the read-through, and then,
busy doing Margot and Jerry impressions.
I think I know why we haven't done this before, because I was always trying to get...
Hello, Tom. Good evening, Barbara.
I know you got a sentence out there.
Apparently, one of the higher-up production people was surprised that she came just to do a single scream.
God, they really don't know people, do they? We were fangirling and boying even back then, you know.
You were fangirling and boying.
Small parts, boing, only small actors.
Boing, 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 boing,
boing.
No, sorry, Debbie said she was fangirling and boying.
Oh, boying,
Yes, I can't remember what I was going to say now. Oh, yes, no, we were saying about people who are in it, and obviously I reckon the reason why we haven't done it is because I'd always been trying to get Lou Bates to come on and talk about playing a Red Kang on it, but she always chickened out and never will. So here we are doing Paradise Towers.
You can always get her on later.
She won't do it. With a lady who is in Cowes, probably closer to this building than Debbie Melrose is. In fact, Debbie, you should actually work your magic on it, to be fair. Never mind. What? Like, Lou Bates.
I thought Debbie was right down the street instead of being across the street.
I'm over the street and a couple more.
Mm. Oh, my.
I should have got you to work up your magic on it, Debbie.
Welcome to the 20 Megabyte podcast about the geographical locations of 20 Megabyte members.
To think that we're only 2 minutes away from everything else in our country, but you know, it doesn't take into account the fact that we can't get off the island easily anymore.
Anyway, Bonnie, sorry, Mel's getting excited about the swimming pool, Paradise Towers, and
I love the fact that, you know, because. Well, I listened to me, but doesn't her TARDIS have a swimming pool? And this next sentence was,
correct, good point.
You had to get rid of the other swimming pool.
It was leaking.
Yeah.
Terry Miles says, kettle's on. that's my point. The Doctor doesn't look particularly enthused by the prospect of going to Tattoo Paradise Towers. But nevertheless, they do go there because Mel sort of persuaded him. And they go out, it's a bit of dump. First thing they notice as they step out of the TARDIS, it's literally a dump. I did think that the sort of stenciled artwork on the wall reminded me a little bit of some of the Cybermen backdrops when they had the stenciled Cyberman sort of logos.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yes, I've got one of those on one of my little laptop computers.
I'm just going to move forward a little bit. And then we meet one of the caretakers. It didn't last very long because he's going to be a dinner, the initial caretaker. And then, of course, Mel and the Doctor get cornered by a load of Red Kangs. Obviously, Kang, take the K out and change it for a G.
They dance at each other.
They were.
The dance that they do towards each other to say hello.
Yeah, very, very childish group of girls.
Kid gangs.
Yeah.
Kid gangs.
Yeah, exactly.
Gangs. Yeah.
I wonder how impressive that dance is, like in person, without the backing track.
God.
You know, it's just them doing that with no noise. It's
like, yeah. We'll try that. Turn the volume down.
It's kind of weird without the punctuation noises.
Of course, the Doctor's carrying an umbrella, which is not the traditional Seventh Doctor umbrella, which I have. And
it's
he will get it next story.
He likes it, so he gets one of his own.
Okay.
He designed the question mark umbrella.
Did he? Oh, I've got a picture of him hooking my question mark umbrella with his own actual... Oh, it's his walking stick. Sorry, it's his walking stick.
Yeah, walking stick, lovey.
All right, smarty pants. She's back, everyone.
You were so excited, and then you were like, it's his walking stick.
So yeah, so the Doctor gets in with the old Prince Charming dance.
Pretty cute, is nothing to be scared of.
Yeah, I set him up. You did.
You did miss out something though.
What did I miss out then, Robert?
The lovely bit where he doffs his hat to that pump.
Oh yes, well, sorry about that. I forgot that.
Which actually was an ad lib. He just did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they decided to keep it in.
Good, because that's a characterization of the Seventh Doctor, which again from this particular story is rather good. We'll let him off time.
He puts it at the end too, doesn't he? The doffing of the hat to the
exactly
on the way out, and he says, "You never know."
You never know.
He's very very good characterization. So I haven't really appreciated Sylvester McCoy's characterization of the Doctor until this moment. No, I'm going to say least favorite Doctor, but still blooming good. That's all I can say. I've always said that. And he's very good in this story. Moving on, yes, there's a load of stuff going on. These sort of robots, rubbish.
Cleaners. Yeah, the war machines?
Yeah. Thank you, Kirby. Where's my belt?
The cleaning machines, you mean, yeah.
Rather tidied up version of the war machines, aren't they?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is I can't find anything saying that they base them on the war machines, but they're obviously based on the war machines.
They are indeed. The Doctor and Mel get sort of tied up and then get separated while everybody runs through the corridors. The Doctor ends up on his back and he gets
running through corridors. Taken in by
the caretakers, and Mel gets taken in by some creepy old ladies. One of which is played by, what's her name, Debbie? One that's got the goofy teeth put in.
Brenda Bruce?
I can't remember the name offhand, sorry.
She's quite well known.
Hold on.
The lady from The Worst Witch?
Yeah.
Not The Worst Witch, you know what I meant. Simon and the Witch.
Elizabeth Spriggs?
That's the one.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Spriggs. Well done, Robert.
No, I just know her as Simon's Witch.
Which witch?
Simon's
Wow. Yeah, so she has a nice cup of tea with the ladies, and then she realises something creepy's going on, and then Pex, rather amusingly, enters the room by coming through the door rather than opening it.
It's broken down their door three times, four times by the end of this story.
Yeah. What I don't understand is, if you look at the state of Paradise Towers, it's obviously that there is no maintenance crew.
Yeah.
How do they get three new doors in one day?
Well, come on, Ian. We've all stayed in hotels like this. I stayed in one in Ryde like this called Yelts, I think it was called. It was me and Deb stayed in it. It was a bit of a dive, to be fair. Sorry, did I interrupt someone?
No.
How do they get the ingredients for their cakes and stuff? And their food. We know where they get most of their food.
Hang on, I can look this up.
Things off the street.
I've got it. I've got the 20 megabyte manual here somewhere. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show. There we go.
Oh, is it?
Robert Bench Jr. says, "Hello, everyone, and a big happy birthday to Robert, not me, the other one." Oh, yeah, happy birthday, Robert.
Happy birthday, Robert.
Yeah, you might as well ask, where does Clara get the ingredients for her souffles?
That was imaginary.
I'll steal a line from the Goon Show. It's all in the mind, you know.
Yeah. And
now Clara gets that wasn't Clara at that point.
It was her mind.
It's all in her mind. Mm. So that's different. Yeah.
Can we move back to this story and the fact that it's Robert's birthday? And I just wanted to point out, and this may turn up on a TikTok talk at some point, excuse me, that when it's someone's birthday, it seems to be a world tradition to sing Happy Birthday badly out of tune. It's about the only song that it's acceptable to sing out of tune. So I'm not going to do it. Happy birthday, Robert.
Robert, there's the Beatles. You say it's your birthday.
Yeah, but that's not out of tune, is it? Oh, I'm talking about happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Yes,
deliberately out of tune. You can have
Happy birthday Robert. To you.
Yes, Gabby.
Is it? wasn't yesterday your birthday because it's already the 21st?
Exactly. It's 2:17 a.m.
See?
On Monday morning.
It's still his birthday here, so happy birthday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's true because I was born in the UK. So, it would have still been.
Point I was trying to make is even if you had Adele and Paul McCartney singing Happy Birthday, it would still be out of tune. Like, it is supposed to be sung
traditionally.
Yeah. I never sang it well.
Anyway, moving on. Back to Doctor Who.
But before we proceed, I just want to put this little thought into everybody's head. Triangles.
Oh, yes. We did this last week, didn't we?
Yeah, and it's in this. It's everywhere in this. Look at PEX. Look at the Rezzy's wall. Panels,
where PEX? Is that the ones down here? Where are the PEX? These ones, aren't they?
I want to know is what is.
I see what you did there.
What is the significance of all these triangles?
I don't know. In rewatching these, we talked about it during Time in the Rani, how the control panels were triangular.
Everything was triangles. Yeah.
And everything in this is triangles
maybe
as well.
Maybe it's the anti-round
fashion at the time.
Probably it was.
Maybe it's to replace those little square things that I've been talking about.
You know what happened? The square thing broke in half.
And became triangles. Yeah.
Robert Vance Jr. said, "Almost time for lunch and football." I thought the football had been over. And then Lillian Robin says, "Happy Robert birthday, Haynes." No, she said, "Happy because my tongue got."
Happy Robert birthday.
Right, back to Doctor Who. We met the Blue Kangs, who are very similar to the Red Kangs, only they're wearing blue. And of course, they're led by an actress called Catherine Cusack, who was an evil woman in Coronation Street not long after she was in this, to be fair. But she's very Irish, so she's putting on the Cockney accent for this.
And then she's part of the Cusack acting family.
Yeah. And right at the end of the episode, the Doctor meets the chief caretaker, i.e. Richard Briers, who's channeling somebody while wearing his tash and his hat.
Who's he channeling?
I think he's channeling Charlie Chaplin from the Great Dictator.
Yes.
And I do love the line when he leads into sort of introduces himself, blah, blah, and they said, "Kill him," right at the end of it, which is quite funny.
Fred was going, "Is that Hitler?"
Oh, it might have been him as well.
It's, 40 years out and England still hasn't gotten over World War II?
Yeah.
Never.
Never,
don't
really
mention the war.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it.
Did you? Well, that's good then. Part two begins with the only exterior shot of Paradise Flat Towers, and the weather's quite nice. Don't know why they're stuck indoors, but they're...
Master?
But have you noticed, every time they cut to the outside shot, it's always the same bunch of clouds sitting in exactly the same place.
I haven't noticed that.
It's also the same shot at the beginning of episode 2, 3, and 4.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the very first thing you see.
It's a very American thing to show the exterior of the location. They used to do that on Friends every single episode.
Yeah. Right, this is where they are.
This
is where we are. Now we're inside. This is where we are. Now we're inside. It's like we've been here for 6 years already. We know what's inside. We know what the outside looks like. Stop it.
Anyway, don't kill the Doctor, by the way. He managed to get away. But Pex and Mel strike up a bit of his friendship. Pex is one of these lads who's that he's tough to actually hide the fact that he's not.
He's petrified.
Yeah. But he wants to be a hero.
Cowardly Cutler.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. No need to be like that, Debbie. I'll try my best.
I was quoting.
Oh. And of course, meanwhile, these machines are just capturing things to feed a mysterious entity, shall we say. And the Doctor...
Hungry!
Oh, yeah, well, you should have eaten before the podcast.
Sorry. I didn't prepare, Kirby.
Well, now, if the implication is that these old ladies are cannibals, where are they getting their meat? Because the cleaners are taking everything off to the big, what's the Cro-Magnon in the basement? Yes.
I don't know. Mary, I'm going to just refer to the manual again.
What can I point out?
Science fiction fantasy
TV. The kid wrote it down on the table.
They do talk about catching rats, but there's also in the Kang's headquarters, you see all these tins and bunch of food in the shelves.
The old ladies have lots of piles of bones, including human bones at one point.
Right.
Terry Miles says Fire Escape was Mark Strickson.
No, this is his ex-wife, or they were married at the time.
Ooh, interesting fact. Yeah.
There's some brilliant names in this. They're really well.
I tell you what, I do like this. I said the sets are quite good in this particular story, and I do particularly like the bridge, the walkway bridge that sort of goes through. Gives a feel of size to the the set. It's really good. And I do love Bonnie Langford's shoulder pads, because she was so tiny, they did sort of give her a bit of a look, shall we say.
Quite shoulder pads were very fashionable then, too.
They were. Yes.
It's already a horrible costume, and then they do it in blue. It's like, oh,
it was consistent. Yeah. It was consistent to Mel's character.
God, I hated the 80s outfits. I really did.
Yeah, well, stop wearing them, and Debbie.
Women, maybe. Yeah.
Debbie?
They didn't do any favors to her figure or anything. It just made her look like a doll.
She's already got a figure. She's just a
thingy. Well, she's already very tiny. She looks tiny. Like a doll.
It put this like single look to it.
So Debbie, I'm
curious as to how someone would have liked to have been dressed as their characters.
That's interesting. Yeah. We might find out one day if somebody asks that question.
I heard when I watched Sylvester and Bonnie Langford do a talk, she did say she'd rather have, if she could have seen what Ace was wearing, she would have preferred to
that
be a
wouldn't
bit
have suited
tough,
her though to be
tough
fair
dress yeah dress more tough to deal with trouble rather than dressed in right. something that had to be immaculate the whole time.
Anyway,
the thing is, they had J&T as a costume advisor, didn't they?
That
explains quite a lot, doesn't it?
Didn't like her costume either.
Debbie,
yes.
Debbie, you said you didn't like the 80s stuff, so I would suggest stop wearing it now then.
I didn't like the 80s. Wear 80s clothes. Jesus.
Anyway.
I'm a jeans and top person, and that's it.
Very jazzercise, shiny fabric, big shoulder.
I got forced into some outfits that my parents then took lovely pictures of and then put them on the wall.
Excellent. High five to your parents. Anyway, then we meet Judy Cornwall's character,
Music and films of the 80s were good, just clothing.
Bounces into the room and has a chat with her two friends who don't seem to be particularly keen on seeing her. They are the Rezies. It was difficult to work out that Rezies was short for residents, wasn't it?
You did wonder if it was going to be a play on words for the fact they were cannibal, blatantly.
Meanwhile, the Doctor comes almost face-to-face with a couple of the very slow-moving and steamy robots and manages to get away, and then lands back in where the Red Kangs are, and they start putting together a little bit of a plan, and the Doctor gets a fizzy drink from a generic...
I love the generic name for it. Was it something
Fizz
like...
Aid.
Fizz Aid.
Master. There we go.
I had to do the research because I was surprised to see I was surprised to see that there were pull tabs that completely came off rather than
I saw that.
And the changeover in Britain happened 2 years later.
What are you talking about?
The ring pole.
The ring poles, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember when they used to come off?
Yeah,
you pull them off, rather than pop downwards, yes.
And then we used to just
drop in our can
once you took them out, and then the can rattled.
Kirby says that the change happened 2 years later, but I seem to remember the first cans I ever got that had that pop down mechanism were cans of Castlemaine 4X, which were particularly popular in Great Britain around
that time.
But
you know why they?
You can't get it now.
You know why it's called 4X, right?
Because they're swearing on it.
No, because Australians can't spell beer.
That's right, I was born in the UK.
Sorry. How often you get to use that's a Kiwi joke on Aussies all the time. So it's like, Thank you for indulging me.
Lillian Robbins says, Debbie. Debbie.
What?
Lillian Robbins says, Debbie, you were 10 when this came out. Were you wearing shoulder pads at 10? In brackets, Debbie and I are the same age. You're both 21 then.
My disco outfit Lillian? Had shoulder pads.
Disco outfit.
You were discoing at 10?
I had shoulder pads, for crying out loud.
I wanted a top that my senior catalog, my mum kindly saved up and got it for me, but refused to cut the shoulder pads out. I'm already built like a footballer, so you can imagine it was quite interesting.
Anyway,
we had jackets and stuff that had shoulder pads sewn into them. I mean, guys' jackets. It was the thing.
I know. I bought a jacket for work a little while ago. Obviously, when I was working, and it had shoulder pads in, and Tom's like, "What are you doing? I'm ripping out the lining."
Oh yeah, and it was symbolic, you know, because women, you know, were trying to project a powerful image, so they wear these big shoulder pads.
And you're like really sort of underlining the 80s-ness of this particular story. So all I'm going to say on that front is,
time capsule.
No.
No, not TVA.
All right. So, we come back to the episode we're trying to review at the moment, and, well, I am at least, and we get to this rather creepy scene here.
Little snack, did I? So how come it's got here? I mean, the cleaners wouldn't do things like that without orders from someone, and it wasn't me, so who was it? Now tell Daddy. If you don't tell Daddy who's been feeding you behind his back, I won't give you the great architect to eat.
Yeah, a bit creepy, but funny. But what I didn't like,
tell
I have
Daddy,
to say...
You've got to tell Daddy.
I have to say, what I didn't like, now I'm going to say this now, was that the, you know, we've come forward quite a long way in Doctor Who over the last couple of series. I'll give examples. The robot in the Mysterious Planet, which we thought was particularly good, and some of the other sort of monsters and stuff like that, very recent, pretty good. And then we come to this thing with some neon lights strapped to a box.
That's sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's rubbish.
Master.
Oh god, here we go.
It's a science fiction fantasy.
Oh, shut up, Kirby. Oh dear. No, it's a bit of a step back in regards to.
I thought they were referencing what was that second Doctor story? With the crabs,
Macra.
The Macra tail.
Yeah, Macra. I thought it was similar to the Macra.
Well, I mean, this wasn't a robot.
Yeah.
This was the guy's brain or something in a machine. So this is a machine he's talking to, not a robot.
Oh no, I'm referring to the fact that the Macra had the headlight eyes.
I'm talking about the machine in this. That this is, you can't say this was a robot. Because it doesn't have any ability to move around or anything. It's just a big machine.
I wasn't saying it was a robot. I was comparing its eyes to the Macra's eyes.
What I don't get is why, when they captured this guy, they thought, I know, instead of killing him, we'll take his brain out and we'll put it in the basement. Because sounds like a good idea, and we'll make sure
he can... about it.
He can connect with the rest of the building, and we'll leave him enough power to do that.
Sorry, I've just got some bunch of Kangs just run that? Through. A bunch sorry, of Kangs just run through the room and started shouting. Where do we get up to?
I kind of needed slapped across the face on that one. It's just like, no. It's a science fiction TV.
Well, to a certain extent.
Yeah, anyway.
They start bullying poor old Pex, and Mel feels a bit sorry for Pex, and then wanders off down the corridor and becomes a potential lunch for the Rezzies. And I do love the Red Kang's strong crossbows, they're quite interesting. So basically that's how episode, which one are we on? I hope it's episode 3, oh darn, it's only episode 2. Comes to an end. Mel is potentially lunch. And I tell you, there was a scene, I don't know if it's this episode or the next episode, where she's screaming as usual, and somebody, I think it might have been Peck, said something which led me to the sentence could have ended, and well, thank goodness she stopped screaming. because anyway, I can't remember the bit. If I find it, I'll play it.
She didn't do that much screaming in this.
Well, she did when she was needed. I can demonstrate. Here we go. Here we go. Especially when Elizabeth Spriggs gets throttled and pulled into the waste disposal. Hey, some triangles there, Ian, on that waste disposal.
Yes.
Isn't it? Just yes. Don't know if you've noticed those.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's also some hand sanitizer and a tub of biscuits. Or cookies, as they say in America.
And as Ian pointed out, triangles again. Didn't it come through those two little triangle pieces to grab the old lady?
Yep. Robert Venge Jr. says, the Miami Vice look, I always liked Don Johnson's coat.
Yeah.
He was in that film. What was it called again? The one with the murders in it. What was that film, Debbie? The one that's recently out that had... Daniel Craig as a detective, and it had
Knives Out.
Knives Out.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that film. It's really good.
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, I'll tell you what happens. Somebody gets killed, the detectives find out who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Mel survives because I think she gets rescued by Pex, and Pex is really pleased because he's really done a proper rescue this time.
Something, yeah.
Plus, she's in the next story, so, you know.
Who, Mel?
Yeah.
I'm watching ahead, sorry.
I had sort of glossed over a little bit is the fact that Mel is very, very keen to get to this swimming pool. Doesn't matter what else is going on in Paradise Towers.
You know, I know, it's ridiculous. She's single-minded. It's like... There's the whole place is falling apart. People are trying to eat other people. But you know what? From hell or high water, I'm getting to that pool.
Yeah. Sorry, Kirby. I talked over, didn't I?
She keeps saying that she's supposed to meet the doctor there.
She swims.
Yeah. She wants to swim,
She
established with the doctor at the very beginning that if they get separated, they will meet at the swimming pool.
Right, right. Yep. So
did she not contrive that particular arrangement?
There, she says, I'm supposed to meet the doctor there.
Okay, we'll let him off that one.
Now, speaking of the next story, I hate to tell you guys, but I've been researching Butlins.
All right.
Oh, goodness.
Okay.
Oh, God. Right, anyway, so...
I said hidey-hi.
Hody-ho.
Hody-ho.
So the doctor, meanwhile, gets grilled by the great caretaker, chief caretaker, and... Mel and Pex get into the lift and try to get up to the swimming pool, have a few problems. Meanwhile, Doctor, with the help of... I do love the way the Kangs are named, like bin liner and waste disposal.
Yeah.
And
fire escape.
Fire escape.
Fire escape was my favourite.
Yeah, a really good name.
Should have dialed that, honestly. Should have remembered that, yeah.
But all the caretakers get tied up.
Yeah, I think
about
one of
the plan.
Mel
gets it. One of the time he goes, he says, "Oh, he actually refers to like the emergency exit." And I'm like, I hope that's not the Kang's name.
Yes,
one of them is named No Exit.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's just like what was the Star Trek one? It'll come to me. Continue.
The Rezzies get a personal inspection from the chief caretaker. And then, like I say, continuation of... Oh, yeah, so I love the fact that when the lift sticks, the Pex tries to fix it by kicking the handle on it, and then it drops. But it doesn't kill them when it plummets. They don't fly so much
as plummets.
Yeah. and also, during the episode, the number of Kangs in it sort of gradually increases. Are they sort of... multiplying? Do they reproduce in some way?
Maybe they're coming out of hiding because now they're you know.
Oh, okay.
So the really brave ones come out first, and then the next ones, the last ones come out, and they say it's just a science fiction TV show.
Ah, yes.
So,
but there's a big meeting between the blue Kangs and the red Kangs, and they sort of we're best, you're best sort of thing. But eventually they will obviously work together. And finally, after a few problems. Mel and Pex reach the swimming pool at the top of Paradise Towers. Pex is a bit sort of not too sure about this, quite rightly so. And Mel says,
"The main problem is that Mel won't shut her gob.
Yeah.
She keeps tell She keeps saying all these things.
Yeah.
And if you notice, every time she says something, it happens.
Yes.
All the way up on the left is like, well, I hope this doesn't happen. Boom, it happens. It's like, it's almost like somebody's writing this down.
Or, yeah, someone's actually listening. Yeah.
It's just like, if you just reverse those things, they would have worked better.
Lillian
like,
Robbins says, didn't the Kangs originally have names when they were little girls?
What?
Lillian Robbins says, didn't the Kangs originally have names when they were little girls? That's all gone quiet, so I guess that's a no.
Well, no idea, unless they already had those weird names as little girls.
If they took the in-betweeners away, then they would, you know, but when do you know your name, you know? Maybe they were young enough that they forgot what their name was.
Anyway, while Mel decides to have a quick lie down
know,
on one
it's
of the
science fiction fantasy TV program.
While Mel tries to have a quick lie down on one of the beach towels left by the Germans, the chief caretaker becomes the body for. Well, he's on his way to become the body for the great. What's it called again?
Architect.
And.
Kragdon.
And then again, the doctor then gets grabbed by one of the. The robot-y things by the throat. He could easily wiggle himself out, so it's not too scary at the end of that particular episode. Mm-hmm. And gladly, we reach episode 4.
Yeah,
the doctor survives.
What, you don't like this?
Shut up. The doctor survives. And of course, what's funny is the Coagnon in the body, embodiment of Richard Briers, walked in this weird sort of John Cleese Ministry of City Walks way. It looks like the monster did, but that is acceptable.
Except it looks like he's getting ready for Strictly Come Dancing the way he's dressed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like he's doing a zombie thing, isn't he? To be fair. So.
He needs to go back to makeup, though, because he's a bit shiny.
Yeah. Right.
Well, maybe Sylvester McCoy. No, insisted that some other actor within Doctor Who had to wear the silver paint.
Yeah, so did you get somebody else in silver? That'd be cool.
Somehow his mustache grew.
Okay, well, sorry about that, Kirby. Meanwhile, Mel has a little dip, and then a weird, strange, pathetic sort of yellow, submarine-y, crabby-type thing attacks her, which then causes all sorts of high-pitched noises to come out of her, and Peck sort of... doesn't really know what to do. He's worried about shooting Mel when Mel sort of screams to shoot the creature. So he hands Mel the gun, and Mel then shoots it, and fine.
Andrew and then, said that one of his favorite scenes is the view from that creature's eyes as it kind of fades away electronically.
Right. Okay.
Although I don't get it. She's far enough away. She's gotten away from the creature. She could have just got out of the ruddy pool. But no, she's like, hang on, I'll stay in the pool.
Yeah. As funny as you say, Kirby, about... Kirby, you said about Andrew. Now, I'll say that Andrew was actually supposed to be on each of these episodes, but there was a communicative error. We were having a discussion on, Tuesday? About he couldn't come on the show, but he was going to record a little section about each story. I got an email, but I didn't get a notification about his response, and then I didn't notice it until 2 days later. So I did then respond and apologise that I didn't get his email. And by then, his computer was broken, so he couldn't do it anyway, because he'd actually said in the last message I'd got, which I didn't see, shall we do it now?
Which we there.
Indeed. So, yes. Hoping that I shall keep in contact with Andrew, and hopefully he'll get his computer fixed. Somewhere between now and next few episodes, and we'll just
we've got 10 more stories to have him on.
Indeed, Alan T. Butcher says the were bin and fire as kids. The were bin and
they were maybe
Might have been they were bin of maybe so. Anyway, another scene I enjoyed up in the swimming pool is when the doctor suddenly bursts through these silver curtains and scares the living daylights out of Mel. That was quite good.
But she doesn't scream.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's a genuine reaction. And then everybody else turns up. the whole cast, yeah, in fact.
Like everybody turns out. So that's all a very intimate building.
Even the even the caretakers, or the surviving ones at least. Because we forgot to mention this, both of the Rezzies that tried to kill Mel are now dead, quite rightly so. And so more plans are hatched to get to Cragnon, is it? Okay, he's putting me a silly name, these things. And I'm just going to cut a long story short, because there's lots
Master, has anyone noticed that the Doctor, every time he shakes hands, is shaking hands left-handed?
No. I'd do that, but that's because I'm
noticed the one time I didn't notice that there's a pattern.
Yeah, it happens several times.
Is he left-handed by any chance? Because I do that, I get in so much trouble with people holding out their right hand.
Insufficient data for meaningful response. Okay.
Anyway, so Pex is naturally given the job to sort of follow this plan through, because Cragnon wants the Doctor delivered to him. Does he not want to use the Doctor's body instead of the chief caretaker?
I don't know.
Anyway, what happens is
he just wants him dead.
The Doctor tries to sort of push Cragnon through the fire emergency exit, but fails. So Pex comes in and very bravely sacrifices himself in the process. And of course, then all the Kangs are all, "Oh, Pex, we love Pex."
On either arm of
become the purple Kangs.
Yeah.
Yeah. On either sleeve of Pex's shirt are a triangle, and of course, the pendant on around his neck is a triangle.
Do you know what I thought was a bit of a shame? You know, they killed off the Rezzies. Pardon?
The bit at the end with the graffiti.
Pex lives.
Oh, yeah, that was good. But, of course, there was graffiti on the TARDIS as well, wasn't there? I wonder where they got the idea from Bad Will from. Anyway, what I thought was a bit of a shame. When they killed off the two Rezzies that tried to kill Mel, then they had to have some Rezzies to show there were more with Judy Cornwall. So they had these sort of non-talking Rezzies who just stood there nodding their heads, which is didn't look right, because women of a certain age, like these people were, we were going, "Yes, oh yes," she said, "Oh," I said, "Oh, did she? Oh, yes, yes," that sort of thing, you know.
they do at EastEnders.
But they were quiet, they didn't seem right. But anyway, so it was a very...
Otherwise the BBC would have to pay them more.
Very solemn scene of the sort of central funeral of Pex, and then the Doctor was given a commemorative scarf, which we never see again. And
tell Pex, tell the underlife who gave his life for the Tower. In life he was not a Kang, but in death he was brave and bold as a Kang should be.
Okay, right. Thank you very much, Robert, for that last bit. Okay, right. Paradise Towers. I don't really know what to make of it, to be fair. It's a fairly watchable story, but it just sort of seems a bit... I get distracted by certain elements. Like, for instance, I feel as if Paradise Towers is a hotel. Obviously, it's a leisure facility. But I still seem to think that the great architect would have thought, I know what we need. The first thing we need is a door, because it's a residential facility, so it needs a fire exit, so it needs a front door. But there's no door. So,
is it ever clarified in the story as to exactly why it's there?
No.
And why they evacuated people there?
I don't know. But anyway, no, it hasn't. No, it isn't. No, I don't know. But
within the story, he talks about the great architect built that miracle place that he didn't want any humans in. So they evacuated all the humans, and he...
They designed the place. People were evacuated because of the war.
They don't mention the cause of it, the cause of why they were coming to Paradise Towers or anything. It's sort of left very ambiguous as to actually why they're there in the first place.
Well, yeah, because they were evacuated to Paradise Towers. He wanted all the humans out of his miracle place. So he put them all in, so he sent them all to Paradise Towers.
Oh, okay.
But then when his own miracle place fell apart, then he wanted to be in Paradise Towers, and he wanted all the humans out.
Oh, okay. Laurie Nick says, "Fish, why stereotype, Adam?" Well, actually, what it actually is, nobody picked up on it, was a reference to this old Smash advert with the, those robots, the alien robots from the Smash advert.
Like Smash gets Smash.
And they said, she said, "Did you?" Said, "Yes, well." It's really sort of that was just my impression.
Well, they've gone all British again, guys.
Just saying.
Yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Google it. Smash advert.
Even me, I, and I I think I'm not sort of not sure whether I like it or not.
I find certain aspects of it irritating, but I do like some of the performances.
What?
Of some,
what
I like
was irritating?
What
was irritating?
It's a bit cheesy with Pex and that. Mel is a bit sort of... I don't know what she's up to. The Doctor's good.
He just wants to go swimming.
Yeah, I know, but it's her fault they're there, and essentially it's her fault that, you know, some people die, because if the Doctor and Mel hadn't turned up, would anything really have been different? I don't know. Would anything have happened? I suppose they would just all been eaten by Caragnon, I suppose. But
yes,
it's sort of... I'm not even sure it's better than last week's story, to be fair. But there are aspects of it I enjoy. So I'm a sort of very, very undecided. I think it's one of those stories that you have to be in a certain mood to watch and enjoy. I don't know if people were just sort of weren't really taking it seriously. A really, really good mood, I think. I think that certain people weren't taking it seriously. I mean, even I know Richard Bryars was putting in a performance, but I just didn't feel as if he was taking Doctor Who as a drama. I don't know.
He said he loved being in this.
I'm sure he loved being in it, but I'm not sure. And he played the part. He did the acting.
Judge it right, did he?
Yeah, I'm not
like
sure.
Like it's a kids' show.
Well, by the sounds of things, from what I saw in the extras, that he wasn't given a direction to play this. He wasn't told, here, I want you to play it like this.
Yeah.
And then so he picked a way to go, and then nobody wanted to tell Richard Bryars not like that.
Mm. Okay. Well, I'll sum up by saying it's a bit of a meh. And Ian's in rolling motion, so we can move on to Ian now.
Alrighty. I'm in an interesting predicament. I hated it.
What?
I really do. It's like, oh man, this is a real. Yeah, to come from the last story to this one, it's just this huge drop. There are really good things in it. Don't get me wrong. I love the atmosphere and the corridors and everything. And the dinginess, and like, hey, cool, Doctor Who's finally, like, you know, getting some really cool sets, and then they put an effort into the, you know, the Barrett, like you were saying, and the graffiti isn't regular graffiti, it's their graffiti, and it's like, hey, this is actually kind of cool. But some of the acting's just way too over the top. And it goes from being this kind of weird horror thing, and then the comedy stuff, and the bit with Mal and Pex really can't decide what it wants to be, because they've got a teeny tiny companion, and they didn't want to put a, you know, they can't put this 6 foot tall guy next to her, because it would look ridiculous. So why have that guy in there in the first place, you know? There's just a lot of things that just go wrong, you know, and it seems to be a problem with this section of Doctor Who for me, this story and then the next two. There's bright spots in Dragonfire, but we'll get to that. But it just seems to be that the show at this point is floundering. It's like they're trying to go somewhere new, but it's not quite working. I think while the Kang language thing was really kind of cool, it becomes confusing and hard to follow. And I think Mary's just really, really good at concentrating, because I find myself just being distracted by other things when I'm watching this. Mm-hmm. And so totally missed how everybody got to be here, even though I've watched this thing three or four times.
I've watched it quite a few times, yeah.
And have you read the book?
I probably did, you know, like 20 years ago.
Because the book's very good, and it sort of made me appreciate it more.
Does it pass it out more?
Huh?
I mean, I get what they were trying to do, but it's just it didn't work. And like I said, the money seemed to go into the set, which was fantastic. And then we get this rubbish monster with some neon lights that they stole off like an ice cream parlor, and they had a smoke machine and a cone that came down. I'm like, oh. And then obviously nobody wanted to tell Richard Bryars what to do, which is the stupidest thing when you're dealing with any actor, is to not tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. I we were I was doing a show, and the director said, sit wherever you like. And they're like, on the stage or in the auditorium? And he goes, or wherever you want. I'm like, do not tell an actor wherever you want. We don't know. We are expecting you to tell us where to go. And that's what they should have told him. They should have said, like what you're doing with that, but what we had in mind was, and that's fine. But nobody wanted to tell him what to do. And that's the problem with getting all these, you know, what JNT did was started loading all these guest actors in for a spot on Doctor Who, and then you're leaving these directors, you know, and you know, JNT's going, oh, what do you do? It's Richard Pryor's. He's brilliant, isn't he? Yeah. Well, I don't know if he really said that. That's just me saying, you know. But it's yeah. Just I went into this going, yeah, I haven't watched this in a bit. Looking forward to this. And just episode by episode it just became a bit of a nonsense.
Oh, okay. Laurie Nick says, we are missing the bigger picture. Sorry, we are missing the bigger question here. What happens to the Kangs when the chlorine in the swimming pool bleaches their hair to orange and green? And then Terry Miles says, Roy Barraclough and Les Dawson do a very good example of what you mean, Adam. There you go. I think what we're going to do now is go to Kirby.
Oh, yeah, because apparently I saw a completely different story than Ian saw, because I love this. I love this one. I'll turn this one on. I'll pull this one out and watch.
Pull it out. That's what she said.
Oh, and the music drove me nuts.
Yeah, music's a bit crappy.
Ian, if the music drives you nuts, you turn on the other music.
Yeah.
Because there's music. Two music tracks.
Is it on the Blu-ray?
Yeah. Not on the Blu-ray. This DVD.
One. It's a DVD, but yes, they do have...
I have a DVD.
They do have the entire other soundtrack music score on there. Because apparently JNT didn't like... Actually... In the extras, they say JNT didn't like it, but in Andrew's book, Andrew says he didn't like the first score. Right. Anyway, I think this
I had the CD of this, and I loved the music. I just didn't like the entire episode was scored. You know, every action on the screen was, you know, and the music was always present. You know, it's like the greetings, and then as the tone changes, like it, this immediate change, and it's like, and it was just so present all the way through. It wasn't like subtle, and it just became kind of yeah. Anyway, it's your turn. Sorry, I'll sit back down.
Anyway, this was Andrew's first attempt. This Andrew finally was able to break away from Pip and Jane, and do his own thing. So he's starting to steer the show the way he wants to, not completely successfully. Yeah, there's better stories coming up. But I really enjoyed this one. It was interesting. This may come up later. But,
please don't.
This is apparently somewhat based on a novel called High Rise. I didn't know until this morning that they made a movie of it 5 years ago.
Yeah, with Tom Hardy.
And I watched the trailer.
My lovely.
What?
The other Tom Hiddleston.
Yes. I watched the trailer this morning and I was amazed that there's a lot of the same stuff. Mm. From the architect to even a whole bunch of kids. So.
Yeah, and I love that book and I love that movie. Shame I didn't love this version of it.
Spoilers.
Spoiler warning.
This is the beginning of a whole lot of stories that I really enjoy. I do not consider the Seventh Doctor to be the worst Doctor. He's one of my favorite Doctors.
In fact, that's quite good you say that, Kirby. That means I don't have to ask you in future episodes what you thought of them. I'll say this one.
Well, you know what I thought of next week.
A good half an hour.
Ooh, High Rise is on Hulu right now.
Love High Rise.
Yes, yeah, High Rise is on Hulu. I pointed that out earlier today.
Oh, you did?
Sorry, yeah. are you done, Kirby?
I guess.
No, he's not done yet.
Oh, sorry, he's not done.
He's not done fawning yet.
Has he done? Is he done?
He's not done fawning yet, I don't think. Are you done fawning?
I'm done.
Oh, okay. Laurie Nick says, "Hey, Kirby, for once I concur beside the silly music, but then I recall the weirdest music in the first Doctor's episodes." So there you go. What else was I going to say? Oh, yes, I feel inclined, because we haven't heard her for so long, and while her dicky ticker's still ticking, Debbie Melrose.
We've got to get her while we can.
Yeah.
Debbie, while you can, yes.
Oh, we need to know what she thought of last week, too.
Yeah, last week, I always loved the Rani. The Rani is amazing, but I felt this was a really flat story. It was more colour than substance, and unfortunately, so was this one. I feel like they're concentrating more and more on becoming more garish, trying to embrace almost like the Ming, the merciless sci-fi side of thing. Yeah, the colour, the vibrancy.
I watched Flash Gordon last night.
Sorry?
I watched Flash Gordon last night too.
Choice. It's one of my favourite films ever. But I did find I remember watching this one very clearly, because I can remember being utterly appalled at seeing a bone on the table with those old ladies offering Mel.
I like that.
No, yeah. That was when I was 10 and how shocking it was at the time. Because I knew what was coming this time. I sat there and laughed my head off. You know, it was so scared of me when I was little. Because that's what, you know, when you talk about Richard Brier's camping it up, and he was terrible. Well, as a kid.
Debbie, if you're offended by the bone, it could have been a rabbit bone. Why at 10 years old?
I thought it was a chicken bone.
Why did you assume it was human?
Just because then it looked human. It looks human. It looks like a femur. It looks like, you know, it looks like part of a...
Yeah, the first time you see bones, it's a femur.
Yeah, it's a human bone. And I'd done enough at school to go, that's a human bone. They eat people. Yeah. Oh, they eat people. Oh,
no. Yeah, it was right before Mal comes in and they're clearing up and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, no, the implication, and I found that absolutely gleeful this time round. I was like, hee, they eat people. Whereas the first time round, I was a kid, impressionable. I mean, Isla's just hit 10, and I look at her watching stuff, and I'm like, wow, I really was scared of stuff, wasn't I? Mm. So,
They weren't allowed to use a knife in it either. They had to use the toasting fork.
It's like, I'm going to get you with this crumpet toasting fork.
No, with my crumpet, it's murder time.
Andrew did warn J&T, don't use the knife, and J&T did anyway, and they got letters.
Mm-hmm. Good, that's what Doctor Who's supposed to do. It's supposed to get letters and stuff.
White House is supposed to complain.
Yeah.
I found that, obviously I love High Rise, so I know I hadn't read High Rise or seen it or anything, obviously, when I was 10, so I didn't really know what they were trying to do with it, and I hadn't really... I now know Andrew Cartmell's work so much better than I did, obviously, back then. And, the idea is great, but I just felt that they were absolutely overacting to the point that I know they were meant to... It was like, were they meant to be childlike, like Pex? Was he meant to be, like, a five-year-old boy? Because I didn't really get that this time round. Obviously, when I watched it as a kid, I totally empathised with them. And you know, the games they were playing and everything. But watching it as an adult, it was very difficult to try and translate it, to try and work out exactly what they were trying to do other than just play games, but playing games like that. You know, and it was just, I just found it quite a confusing story for me. I mean, I watched it twice this week. And obviously I still had to ask, why did they, why were they there in the first place? Because I just felt it kept getting lost in translation. It felt like everybody had a different reason for as to why they were moved. And I totally get that, because people feed wrong information to people all the time, or select information to people. But then when the cleaners are absolutely, they were a highlight, those cleaners with the box, with their little toe along, just right size for a couple of bodies, boxes that they had. I thought that was just brilliant, but all I could think of was war machines, and then somebody put up a picture of the war machine next to
me.
How did they get them in the back?
It's a good, yeah, exactly. How did, I mean, must be something to do with that great big.
They open up at the front or something, and then there's just.
No, you can detach, you see them.
The trailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are trailers. They detach, they turn around.
Yeah.
You see them without the trailers.
But how did they get them in the trailer?
They lift the claw.
To bend, are claw.
They? Oh, that one claw can pick. Anyway,
wait, science fiction.
Fantasy TV program. Oh, yeah.
It is this era that, especially this, you know, the Sylvester McCoy's era, that I remember most the enemies, the baddies, the evil people. The Candyman is the scariest thing I have ever seen Candyman, in my life. who can take a sunrise? That's just terrifying. It's here and now that I remember the baddies more. I remember the architect. I remember the old ladies, lovely old ladies, but with the bone on the plates. And I remember the tower. I remember the swimming pool. I remember the monster in the swimming pool. I know it's terrible. It's this plastic thing, you know. But I remember being terrified of that. And going back now, we're watching stuff that I really do remember now, not just vague memories of. It is proper. I remember watching this episode. I remember watching this story. So it's been a good walk down memory lane. But for me, I did find this episode a little bit confusing. I mean, I'm still in and out with medication, and my brain is not where it has been for the past 20 years. So yeah, yes, yourself included. Sorry.
I know the feeling.
And it's been a hard couple of months, but I'm looking forward to a couple of stories that I know by heart that are coming up. And but this one for me probably 3 out of 5.
So did you say that Isla'd watched it?
Bad.
Yes.
Did you say she was scared of the swimming pool monster?
No, she wasn't. She's
kids are more with it these days.
Yeah,
She likes Ghostbusters and Percy Jackson and things like that. You can't be scared of something like that in a swimming pool.
Okay. Lauren Nick says, OMG, Adam, that's an excellent comic for which I am reading Giant Size Avengers True Believers number 1. It's a Marvel comic. I'm just having a while you're doing your bit. I thought I'd have catch up on this comic book, which I've got a while back and haven't had a chance to look. I'm not getting distracted or anything. I was listening.
I'm that boring. I'm back on.
I've been flicking through it during everybody's
bit. He wants you on so he's got more time to read.
Yeah.
Right then. Robert, what did you think of it?
I'm glad I'm useful. There you go.
Talk
everybody
longer.
Likes the layman, and that's me. There you go.
Robert.
He's hoping for a really long review from Ellen T. Butcher today.
Robert!
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
I must say, when I first watched it all those years ago, I found it confusing. And then I read the book several years ago, and it's such a very good book. I really, really enjoyed it. And it filled in a lot of the blanks as to what was happening. Like, what was supposed to be happening is the young guys went off to war and didn't return, obviously. The caretakers were supposed to be like all old and fat, lazy guys who, were no good for the war. So that's why
that was not well cast there.
That's
probably why I was confused. I think I'm going to get the book because I would really like to explore this one a little bit more.
Yeah. So those things didn't come across on the screen, and also Peck's supposed to be a big, muscly guy. And so it was supposed to be ironic that he's a big, muscly guy, looks like he could handle himself, but he hid so he didn't go away to war and therefore ended up, being cowardly cutlets. Exactly. So those things sort of didn't come across because of casting decisions. So, but I quite love the story now. I mean, I understand... from reading the book a bit more about what they were trying to do but didn't come across. And the sets I thought were pretty good. I mean, again, the lighting with these things, I don't know why. Sub stories, you look back something like Talons of Wang Chiang, and that was lit so well. It's not like the bright day glow 80s where everything is sterile and overlit. I mean, it works for something like the Ark in Space. But, you take something like Talons of Wang Chiang and the lighting on that, so atmospheric. That was what was needed in this story to make the scenes inside this apartment block look, very atmospheric. But instead it got the sterile lighting. But
the thing is just interrupting you a second, is I thought the corridors were well lit. But then we get into the Rizzi's apartment.
Yeah.
It was all so bright and clean. It's like, no, it needs to be run down and kind of, their place needs to be a little kind of like a bad light and stuff.
No, you live with these little old ladies, you know, and they keep their homes pretty. I mean, yeah, cluttered, and they work.
That's what I thought.
But,
yeah, but nobody would be maintaining like the lighting and stuff like that. There should have been some, you know, some things that were broken, not in functional part of the building.
Like bulbs, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
If they can get new doors, they can get new lights.
Just get a new door every 5 seconds.
Kirby, I was thinking about that. I think they just go along to the other flats and nick one from the empty flats. Become a dab hand at just changing the bolts on the side.
That's what we've been missing. That's the should be on the next deleted scene. One of them going out with a screwdriver. Knocking the bolt.
Yeah, why not? How you doing, Robert?
The whole time swearing at PAX.
Bloody kid, I'm going to stop going down to the level at this rate. Yeah.
See, I thought the whole thing with PAX was that he was. I thought the whole thing with PAX was the fact that he was such a scrawny little guy who thought he was a strong guy. That's part of the point.
No, it's more to do that. He's a big guy.
It's intended, yeah.
Like a Rambo sort of guy, but, you know, being cowardly.
He was supposed to be good for going to war, but he just chickened out, yeah. But he did look scrawny.
Yeah.
Is that sorry, it, Robert?
But,
oh, you're still going, sorry.
With Richard Briers, I didn't think he was too bad as the what was his name?
He was a chief caretaker.
I didn't think he was too bad when he was that, but as Cryagnon, I mean, he was really, you know, well, the pigs are flying around, so much ham. and they should have really said, you know, Richard, we like what you're doing, but, you know, could you... But, yeah, he was the only sort of disappointing... I mean, when I first watched it, I didn't find him too bad, which was funny enough. But over the years, I sort of think, well, no, he's when he's Cryagnon, he's really going. But it's like he's judging it like a kid's show. Like, you know, when the baddies in the kid's show, they're always, moustache twirling type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people thought Doctor Who was a kid's show.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, it's made by the drama department, not the children's department, which is what people don't seem to get. But you know, I quite like it, and read the book because the book's very good, and you get more insight into the.
I've just found it on eBay. I'm going to buy it.
But sorry. Yeah, that knife. I mean, that was I don't know. That's just a bad call. You know, holding a knife, you know, and then threatening someone. A kid can easily copy that.
Yeah. So you're probably right.
It's a knife. It wasn't like it was
get the drama of the tango adverts.
Hmm. Oh, right. Are you done, Robert? Sorry.
Yeah, like a dog sitter.
Okay. So this is the bit that everybody's been waiting for. Mary, what did you think?
I don't know what her opinion's going to be.
Well, I was highly entertained
by
this story. Now, it doesn't mean I liked it, because, I mean, I couldn't decide if it was a comedy or an action horror.
Have you seen it
before,
Mary?
Pardon me?
Have you seen it before?
I have watched it before, yes. This time, yes. But, I mean, it's a story that couldn't figure out whether it wanted to be a comedy or an action horror. But it was so jammed full of stories that begged for, like, more background or, you know, backstory. Mm. This could have added an episode or two just to fill us in on a lot of this. That is so confusing for us because we don't know. Well, that came out of nowhere. What is this that's going on?
Yeah.
But again, reading Cartmell's book, he talks about how he and the writer, Stephen Wyatt, would sit in his office and just howl over this script. They would have such good time and they would laugh a lot. So I'm thinking, well, then they intended it to be a comedy.
Yes.
Which
how black comedy, isn't it?
No, they went for the comedy element, which unfortunately undercuts you know, the tension or the horror that you should be feeling with these cleaners and the killing off of the Kangs and everybody else. So it's because it's so confusing that way. I can't say that I definitely liked it. I'm kind of like Adam. I'm on the fence about it. Why this the author Wyatt knew a little better to write for Sylvester. See, Pip and Jane didn't know him at all. They only knew that he was kids' comedy actor. So that's why the last story had him just, you know, reeling off, you know, one comedic line after another. Whereas this one, he was allowed to be a little bit more serious in what he was doing. But I object to the fact that he really was not centrally involved in very much. He was kind of always off to the side, and it was Mel who was always in the middle of the action. So she was more dominant in this story. So maybe they still couldn't really figure out what they wanted to do with Sylvester. And then the suggestion that the young kids were kept and the oldsters were kept and the in-betweeners were sent away, the Kangas seem a little old for that. I think they actually would have been more effective had they been like 10 or 11 years old, as opposed to, you know, actresses in their 20s.
It's been years since they went away to war.
Yeah.
Well,
why they still talk young as well, because they didn't have any parent figures, did they?
Well, I think it would have been more horror-inducing had they been younger, because it would have been a little more Lord of the Flies, you know, where really young kids... Yeah. You know, are sometimes more threatening.
And they talked about Lord of the Flies.
Because they should be, you know, they should be more innocent, you know, but for them to be like that. And then I wonder, well, then, okay, if the youngsters stayed and the oldsters stayed, where do these caretakers fit in? Because they're like grown up 40-year-old men, you know, so why did they stay? And I know that the script originally called for them to be, you know, these decrepit old guys in very shabby outfits. And I know that according to Cartmell's book, that there was a fight with the costume department, why the outfits that they were wearing were not shabbier than they were. But, you know, so this whole age thing, I think, got very confused because of how and who they casted. Let me see if there was anything else I wanted to say. I don't know. I know that I don't care for the Seventh Doctor, but I thought that Sylvester was pretty good in this with what he was given. And then along with the direction that you guys were talking about, Richard Briers was pretty much left to play it comedically, but then they saw it comedically, so that explains that. But then they also let Sylvester stick in his little ad-libs. You know, one of the most noticeable ones is when he takes his hat off to that little tower thing when he gets out of the TARDIS at the beginning and at the end. But I guess there were things that he was sticking in all the time that they were just letting it go.
She said.
So there was very little actual production going on, it seems. So anyway.
Why don't you do that one, Robert, because it's your birthday.
What slide, Robert? We're being indulgent. Pretty much it. I mean, I was entertained, but I wanted to know more. So I would like to, you know, the story to be, you know, another episode or two to give them some more stuff to talk about. But I can't.
Well, the background
it kept me going because I kept wanting to know the answers, which I never got. But I can't
say that. You're deleted scenes, Mary.
Well, I don't think that would explain the background. You know.
No, it doesn't. No.
It wouldn't answer what I wanted to know. No. I'm not fond of this one. Entertained by it, but not fond of it.
Oh. Thank you, Mary.
Just me and you, Kirby.
Yep. And apparently some people in the feedback.
Yeah.
Well, Laurie Nick says Robert slipping one in. And Alan T. Butcher said, I fed back. Hang on. Alan T. Butcher says, I fed back, but I have to admit it's a long one.
Oh, God.
Ooh, that's
come on. Long.
You should be able to get some good reading in there. And then
I just were hoping that Debbie's Dicky Ticker can be up for a reading.
Alan, you're known for your brevity.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say he's known for his long one for a minute there, Mary.
He's known for his long one.
Chips.
Right, then we can move on to feedback via, apparently I would guess, I'm only hazarding a guess here, that Kirby has posted a request for said feedback. Have you, Kirby?
Of course.
He does. Here we go, okay. Then.
Chris Miller says, I love the serial. One of the reasons the McCoy era is one of my favorite of classic Doctor Who. Lillian and Robin quotes Blue Kangs. At the funeral, hail the Kang, hail the unalive Kang, yellow of color, but brave and bold as a Kang should be. Chris Miller says, I love that. Robert Wentz Jr. says, do the do, which are you, red Kang or blue? Alan T. Butcher posts a picture of Kang from The Simpsons. And also a picture of the old ladies, the Rezzies, with their toasting fork. We need someone to go with our stew. How about you? I am not going to sing this.
Go on.
Good.
Sing it
then. Robert Wentz Jr. says, needs to be singed. Mama just killed a man, puts a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Okay?
Yes.
Well,
He also says, review of Paradise Towers or Mel's Quest for a Swimming Pool. Simply put, what?
Ragnar. Obviously not that simply put.
until he gets to take over the chief caretaker played by Richard Briers so he can kill everyone in the towers seems to be the main thought of the story. A lot of plot in this one, but a lot better than Time in the Ronnie. Yes, definitely.
Yes.
We find out Mel wants to go for a swim. Could they not find a nice beach somewhere? For some reason, the doctor had to jettison the TARDIS pool. What was leaking? Besides that, we get the red and blue Kangs fighting it out. Tilda and Tabby's pursuit of culinary delights. Peck's pursuit of being a good guy. The rule of the caretakers. Killer machines and body being taken over. A lot to take in for this four-part story. The doctor using the rules to his advantage. Oh, yeah, that was funny. Or making them up for him to escape. Reminded me of the Green Death with the BOSS computer boss. Also reminded me of the grim fairy tale of the witch with the gingerbread house that would cook children. All in all, it was okay. My rating is 3 out of 5 Red Kang's rule.
Ah.
And... Chris Miller says, isn't a lot of plot a good thing? I posted a picture of Bad Wolf Beach and said to Robert Wentz, how about this beach?
That's a long pause, Chris Kirby.
He was hoping for maybe a ding? Maybe he was hoping for a bell,
no
I think. I don't know, on that master class of comedy.
Chris Miller says this is based on he originally said Robert Ballard novel, which I actually read because I love the episode. I said J.G. Ballard, if I may be pedantic, and he then went back and edited it. I posted the trailer to High Rise and said it's on Hulu, like someone said a few minutes ago.
Yes.
Chris Miller asked me, is the movie good? I said, I have no idea. I didn't know it existed until a few minutes ago. And he also says, of course you can be, referring to my being pedantic. Serves me right for not looking it up. Robert Ballard is the underwater guy. Robert Wiss Jr. says to me that I'm always pedantic. Am I?
Well, yeah.
Just a little. Not that anyone would really notice.
You're just as pedantic.
Here we go.
Yeah, but I do it with an element of cool.
Yeah. Ian does it in a fun and ironic way.
Neil James.
What, there isn't room for 2 pedants on this podcast?
Anyway, back to the
feedback.
Yeah.
Oh.
Neil James. Well, wait a second. Speaking of pedantic, I mean, would you have thought of looking up the dates of pull tabs?
Yes.
Did you notice how many triangles were there?
No, because I didn't notice the triangles.
Exactly. Too busy looking up pool tabs.
Well, that's because I discovered that there's an entire scientific inquiry as far as the history of pull tabs.
You think that scientists would have more things to discover, wouldn't you?
Triangles.
Anyway, COVID. Back to the feedback.
Neil James says Paradise Tower is probably the biggest insult that is hurled at Doctor Who fans is that it was a kids' show. Now, we all know that's not true, but I'm not sure I'd use this story to back up my argument. Some of the story is downright childish, and there's no getting away from it, but it also features some quite heavy themes of gangs and fascists. Not to mention it ends with a suicide. The Kangs are great fun, and I love the names Bin Liner and Fire Escape. The Rezzies also kept me entertained, although I'm pretty bowled over that Mel happily sits down for tea and cookies when she has no idea if the Doctor's even alive. Pex is an embarrassing character, but I kind of wish he'd survived at the end. As a child, I was terrified by the cleaners. As an adult, the only thing that terrifies me is Richard Pryor's acting. The location work is bizarre, as it's clearly just someone's back garden, and I'm not sure about the silly yellow robot. However, I very much like the sets and overall setting of the rundown once grand tower block. The music is nuts, and most of the characters and actors are very watchable. Finally, Mr. McCoy is in his groove after a dodgy start last week. 3 stars out of 5. Robert Wiss,
yeah, well,
says,
I agree with Robert here. Suicide or sacrifice for Pex. It was definitely a self-sacrifice, not suicide.
Oh, you just read the one I was about to read.
Yeah, I was just saying. I agree with him.
Yes. And Neil James says, sacrifice really, but suicide sounded more dramatic.
Yeah.
Lori next says, let them eat cake and tea.
Yes, please.
She also says the budget for Manic Panic Crazy Color Hair Dye was astronomical this episode. Yes, I've had my hair of a similar hue in much younger days.
Same hair.
Me too.
I've had my hair orange.
I ought to do my hair, what's left of it.
I did mine red during lockdown.
I've been in color.
And then I responded to her wigs, if I may be pedantic. And she responds, it's always implied that I know these things and wax poetical. However, there were many a punk rock chick in the 80s who teased their hair into a fright wig look.
Uh-huh.
And then there's Mel's hair, by the way. Tony Basil wants her outfit back.
Yeah.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, were you a Red Kang, Lori? And Ian has
no,
his,
that'll do. Hair. Thank you very much. Thank you. Grief.
What?
I'm going to send Mary because we're going to send the Alan T. Butcher's blurb to Debbie this week. You're going to read out Mary Terry Miles's blurb. I've just sent it to you. Aren't you lucky?
Sounds like you just received it too.
Well, she's just digesting it, listeners. If you wonder what the silence is.
Oh, you want me to read it now? I thought you were going to play Ian's thing first.
No.
Okay.
I don't make it easy for you.
I just posted a link to Pull Tab Archaeology.
Oh, joy.
Okay, all right. So this is Terry Miles, right?
Yes.
Hey, all right. Paradise Towers writer Stephen Wyatt based this story in part on High Rise by J.G. Ballard. It shows how people will stick together in tribes with the Kangs, the Rezzies, the Caretakers, and, of course, two cannibalistic old ladies. Turned the sound down again, as Screamer was at full blast throughout this one. I guess she did scream at times, but she wasn't that bad. What was their idea, having the great architect imprisoned in the basement of the tower that he had designed? Did they know they had let him put in a homicide pool cleaner and some murderous cleaning machines stalking the carry doors? Yeah, one of my questions throughout that was never answered is why and how did he end up being in that machine in the basement?
Yeah.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV book.
Yeah.
That's in the book, Mary.
The Kangs like to redecorate the carry doors and the TARDIS. I didn't like it. Linda and myself were playing Spot the Actors, Judy Cornwall, Onslow's wife, as Maddie. Clive Merrison is deputy chief, seen him before in earlier Doctor Who, Tomb of the Cybermen, I think. I thought of a few of the Kangs were young actresses that went on the appear in other shows. Having watched this in SD on transmission, then in HD yesterday, one or two things stood out. When they have a knife thrown to land by someone's head, they film it backwards and use a piece of string to pull it out when shown forwards to look like it lands by their head. I know this because you could clearly see the string when Pex has it thrown at him. I thought they might have cleaned it up. After all, it's only there for 2 or 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. Pex gave up acting after this and became a theatrical agent instead. Well, all those nasty girls calling him names, I don't blame him.
True.
The story was okay, but it did drag a bit. I feel it could have been done in 2 episodes instead of 4. At least there were no spoons. Mary probably... didn't like it, as there was a lot of running through corridors. Linda and Terry Miles.
Thank you, Linda and Terry Miles.
Well, I didn't like it, but I disagree. I think it could have been more episodes to explain it.
Yeah.
Hello, 20 Megabuck Podcast. Hello. I am known as Ian Kirk.
Hello.
Last week, there was a problem with Adam's smart speaker
being
triggered by my saying its wake word. It is no extra work to substitute a fake wake word. I record my smart speaker's response separately and edit it in. It's because my microphone has a cardioid pattern. That's a technical term. It just means I'm very quiet when I'm talking out of my backside. Zoanen, who is Ian Kirk?
Ian Kirk Limited, selling furniture, based in Leeds Road, Otley.
Ian Kirk Limited is a furniture shop in Otley, Yorkshire, in case anyone needs to buy a chair. Some weeks I cannot think of any jokes. Last week, I was on fire. My script is available on the 20 Megabyte Facebook page, which you can join. The podgrammers read it as they listen. And sometimes there are extra jokes I don't say out loud. Like when I just said fire, there might have been an extra laugh. The jokes just pop into my head. Or not. Like if I say, what is the capital of Spain? The word Madrid pops into your head. Unless you're an American. Paradise Towers. Build high for her penis. There's a big cast. A lot of women. Just saying. I don't think you have to go to an alien swimming pool. Yellow Kang, the last, unalive. Reason not known. It might have been Professor Plum with the lead piping. Or Reese with a spoon. The celebration of the unalive Yellow Kang is a forward reference to the celebration of Pex. Pex is a coward who keeps boasting of his fighting prowess. The three main political parties use the following colours and had the following numbers of members of Parliament in 1987. Labour, red, 229. Conservative Blue, 376. Liberal Yellow, 22. So there might be an obscure joke in there only being one Yellow Kang. Inexplicably, Mel Gibson, I mean Mel Bush, picks a random planet to go for a swim. It takes Mel most of the story to finally get to the swimming pool, and then she regrets it. The rule book is far too small for the rule numbers.
Doctor Who is a science fiction fantasy television program.
Clan Merrison is good as the deputy chief caretaker. In the end, he is a Nazi with a heartsy. On a second viewing, we can appreciate Tabby and Tilda saying things like, that delicious smell, or that the Kangs will not visit two innocent old ladies. The programme has to hide it from younger viewers, though. In the US, rich people live in skyscrapers. In the UK, it is poor people who live in tower blocks built in the 1960s.
Yes.
The idea that architects dislike the idea of people living in their creations and messing them up sounds plausible. Caretakers are janitors or supers in the USA, in case someone had not guessed. Why would caretakers have an emergency supply of explosives?
Why not?
This is an enjoyable story, and I will probably buy the DVD.
Why not?
4 minutes, 21 seconds. Take that, 2-minute time lord. Bye for now.
Hey, that's the longest one ever from
Ian.
Yeah,
that is. Yeah.
It was probably
why not? Like
perhaps
that,
2 Kirby. Minutes too long.
Yeah.
Or, anyway. Which leads us on to Mrs. Dicky Ticker Melrose, who is just about to read out Alan T. Butcher's blurb.
Take a deep breath.
The grating architecture, or it's really not bad, it's just ungood. Dear 20 Megabyte, Paradise Towers is, of course, a closely studied microcosm of a dysfunctional society which was set up with lofty ideals but has degraded in an extreme manner. The generational divide represented by the Kangs and the Rezis seems to be a complete social fracture, and within the Kangs there is obviously a tribal distinction, which whilst apparently quite arbitrary, nevertheless constitutes a material block to cooperative behaviour despite being founded on a collective principle. The missing section of the population may be representing a total breakdown in the polity which has let this society down, and the caretakers seem to fill that vacuum with an empty bureaucratic system which is built around activity which does not seem to be relevant to achievements of any value. Peck seems to be an ineffectual political activist who retains his naive trust that he can put things right, but no real idea of how he will do so unless by the ultimate sacrifice and example. The resurfacing of Croagnon, the great architecture, great architect, as a malignant force, though it has been venerated by the bureaucracy publicly and has in fact been viewed cynically by them, seems to point to the fundamental flaws in the original constitution of the construct which founded this society. Therefore, breaking its hold is the route to a better world. So, a society where politics has broken down, people have lost faith in it and each other. The constitution is fundamentally flawed. Political activism is unfocused, and the most wayward person around is in authority. The UK, the USA, elsewhere, all of them, you decide. I'm going to say, it sounds a bit like Britain now, but there you go. It should be noted that whilst some suggest that blue Kangs are best, it is very obvious that red Kangs are best, at least in the UK, although substantially the opposite is true in the United States. Meanwhile, under the current system, particularly the yellow Kangs and generally the green Kangs are a wasted vote. We also learn that the well-known, likeable, control freak and self-sufficiency practitioner Tom Good went on after losing Barbara to a transition period, taking over more officious going under the name Martin Bryce and being married to a future prime minister, but ended up going well overboard after getting a job as a caretaker, doing well, meeting a sticky end under the influence of Croagnon, who was maybe a cousin of Zoannon from Leela's home planet. Yeah. Maybe. All in all, Paradise Towers has quite a lot going for it, and it is just a shame that it looks cheap and tacky and has the feel of a low-budget children's department production. There is quite an effort put into world-building here, and everyone is aware of the source material being the Ballard novel High Rise. Whether vicariously through that or directly, I detect the influence of Anthony Burgess's Clockwork Orange in the dialectical stylizations. This is reasonably sophisticated in construction, but being primarily euphemistic, it is not served well by the tone of the performances, which serve to make it sound over-deliberate in a sort of play-school delivery. Mm-hmm. There is no denying Sylvester McCoy has taken a huge step forward here.
Agreed.
It is difficult to be sure whether his views would seem better or worse in a better script. It is difficult not to conclude that the director ruined the story, but the writer, the generally good actors, and the producer must have been complicit in transforming what might have been a hard-hitting and scary social commentary into an extremely subpar drama-rama.
Yeah.
This story is perhaps an episode too long, since if many of the characters weren't speaking unnaturally slowly, we might have got through it more quickly, and they wouldn't need to sound minded. Next up, Doctor Who and the Knotty Problem Falls to Ashes, or Heidi High Hits a Lodi Low. Those are my thoughts. You got me.
That's been a while.
Lillian Robbins says, closely studied, Lorinick says, pedants fight. And then Lorinick said, yes, I was. And Billy Kirk Bright says, hello. Or as you say, probably say, good air. Isn't that as a Debbie Northern Cook. Australian say? Good air, mate. So good air, Billy. Right.
You said Debbie Kirk Bright. I'm like, I'm not married to Billy.
Billy Kirk Bright. Dare you. Never said it. I probably did, actually. I do tend to slip over my words. Right then, so that's good. Then I don't see anything else is coming through. I think somebody did say something on the stream post I did on the 20 megabyte page, which has disappeared. Oh, there it is. Lauren, it says, hello, all you and Debbie. That was probably quite a long time ago now, but I thought it deserved a mention.
Hello, right. Everybody and you.
Yes, right then. So, Doctor Who News, which I'll have to Google because you can't actually type in the URL for it. Doctor Who.
What? Yes, you can type in it. Well, if it doesn't work for me. Doctor Who, it says Doctor Who locations.
And congratulations, Kirby. Locations. Congratulations.
I'm not surprised that's your first search.
Yeah.
No, I'm very surprised it's his first search, actually. To be fair.
And the second one is Doctor Who News.
Mm. And the third one's pull tabs.
Doctor Who News.
Let's start with Doctor Who.
Lethbridge Stewart, Lucy Wilton updates. There's some more.
Yeah, originally, the pull tabs were a triangular shape there.
Oh, yeah, okay. Candy Bar Books has announced the second of its standalone Lethbridge Stewart.
Isn't that a fascinating website, pull tab archaeology?
Excuse me.
The triangles are more fascinating.
Excuse me. We've moved on from whatever you're talking about.
No, we haven't.
To the new.
You may have.
Candy Jar Books has announced the second of its standalone Lethbridge Stewart hardback novels for 2020, Kiss of the Mice, Aiden, by a relative of Kirby, Michael Sloan. Doctor Who magazine issue 556 is out with a very nice picture, drawing in fact, of Christopher Eccleston, which very much looks like one of Alistair Pearson's artworks to me.
Eccles? Have you seen Eccles?
What? Alistair posted on his Facebook page.
It was a Goon Show reference.
Yeah, thank you, Kirby. That's
unusual,
isn't it? but he posted a picture. I said he's only done one of Eccleston. And that really does look like his, but it doesn't credit him in his post. But anyway, if you want Doctor Who magazine, all around the world, you can get it from whowon.co.uk. Probably more, what's the word for it? Easier. Than other mediums, especially if we're living outside the UK. Doctor Who at Comic-Con. Doctor Who will have a strong presence at this year's New York Comic-Con, the MCM Comic-Con Metaverse. BBC Studios have announced that two panels will join the already announced Doctor Who Spotlight panel from BBC America, featuring Jodie Whittaker, Mandip Gill, and Bradley Walsh. And I thought Bradley Walsh has finished with his Doctor Who stuff. Unless, of course, they haven't done his episodes yet, have they? Although they're filming, but very sporadically, I've heard at the moment. A bit of a sporadic filming going on. That's about it, because then we fall down to the last week's announcement of the passing of Diana Rigg. Not much Doctor Who news.
Mm-hmm. Can I mention something?
No.
No.
No, it's about Fury from the Deep, the animation.
Yeah.
I've been watching, I think I've watched three episodes so far. And I tell you what, it's not on a par with the other ones.
Is it not?
He was saying that, yeah.
It's disappointing. The arms are just so long in it. They look like, ridiculous.
I've heard it's a bit of a disappointment, but I'd still like to watch it anyway.
That's a shame that they haven't did they not take the time to do it like they did with the other ones? So they're just sort of rushing this one.
No, I mean, when you look at it looks like it's been farmed out to a number of different people. It's got a lot of Indian sounding names in the animation. So I don't know whether they farmed it out to India or something, but even Van Lutyens, played by John Avenery, Toby Hodak's favourite actor, he looks like Herman Munster.
Okay. Like I said, I'd still like to see it, even if the animation is poor, to be fair. Talking of DVDs and Blu-rays...
Heavy?
It's not necessarily DVDs and Blu-rays. What it is that I do bang on about BritBox, but I don't know if it is around the world, but in the UK, the two Doctor Who movies are both now on BritBox.
Yes, they are.
They are indeed. And there's a load of really good stuff.
1963 one.
What Doctor Who movies are you talking about?
Doctor Who and the Daleks and Doctor Who.
I played the TARDIS, the films where he came up with the idea of the TARDIS.
The Peter Cushing movies.
It's the Peter Cushing movies. Both of them.
One's based
on
the Daleks and Daleks Invasion of Earth.
Yeah, the first one, the Daleks one, is the most widely watched one. The second one is not. You know, it's not as been as easy to get hold of, so I'm quite pleased that's on there. I
don't need BritBox to watch that. I
just wish they'd been available when Jenny Lindon was around, because we could have treated her with that, because she said she didn't really watch them very often. Also, there's loads of really good stuff coming. We're actually starting to do original programs on BritBox as well, which is going to be quite interesting to watch.
They've been doing original programming for a while.
Have they? Oh, okay, I wasn't unaware of that. But they're doing some more original stuff. All right, iwheroes.co.uk. I'm quite interested to see the new stuff coming in. So I'm going to their new releases page, where they've got lots of sort of Funko Disney stuff, Christmas themed.
I love the Funko stuff.
Yeah, it's a really cool little, rather camp looker. I think I don't know if it's Mickey or Minnie. It does look like, the way the mouse is standing, looks very camp, but it does say Mickey. It says Funko Pop Vinyl Disney Holiday Mickey. That would make a great little Christmas decoration, to be fair. I might have to buy that. And there's a mini one as well. I think the Mickey one's really, really cool. And also there's loads of other bits, like the Marvel Zombies Deadpool. The Marvel Zombies is a current theme that Funko have brought out at the moment. There's lots and lots
of... Oh, yeah, because of Halloween, you know.
Yeah,
you gotta do
absolutely. But, of course, we're not going to get much of a Halloween
this year.
Halloween
is my favourite time of year.
Yeah, well, we would have had a convention this Halloween, but we're not going to get either this year.
Next year.
Funko Pop Vinyl Maybe. Crash Team Racing Crash Bandicoot. Is also
cool. I love Crash Bandicoot.
The thing I love
that
most about
the game I got banned from that was because I kept winning.
I finished
a new one coming out.
I was happy to finish it. I'll tell you what about Crash Bandicoot was. I've still inherited the little when you stopped playing him and he used to stand there with his foot tapping. I do that. Just I'm standing here with my Crash Bandicoot foot tap. So yeah, still there. To indulge mentally with Crash Bandicoot. So there's some really good stuff coming through on the Heroes site. Lavazzi. Now, Christmas is coming with Lavazzi. It is, in fact, the last day of summer today. Well, where, as far as Robert's concerned, it's the autumn solstice.
Spring now.
It's autumn here.
Yeah, it's spring there.
Oh, right, the spring equinox then, isn't
spring
it?
Spring has sprung at the beginning of September.
So I'm just interested to note that they must be starting to put up their Christmas goodies. But what you can get...
I saw some Christmas pudding in the shops.
...is the 13th Doctor scarf. I would get it if I hadn't got a copious amount of scarves hanging off my coat rack as it is.
I've seen that.
I'd get one if I wasn't in Florida.
My bedroom door.
Yeah.
We are currently...
Cold, like half a day out of the year.
We are currently themed with the 7th Doctor. So you can get the 7th Doctor hanky and the 7th Doctor silk paisley scarf if you wanted to do what Matthew Kressel does and cosplay as the 7th Doctor.
Do you suppose Matthew will ever be on the podcast again?
Yeah.
No, he's too much of a he's too much of a celebrity now. You could also, on that theme,
he's a celebrity. Yeah, get him out of here.
He's a writer and stuff, isn't he? 7th Doctor jumper, which I have got, which is in a box somewhere, but I overwore it and made it go all bobbly and stuff. But you can get a brand new one. It's
fancy wearing an item of clothing. Oh,
£44.99. but yeah, so that's a very good collection of 7th Doctor. In fact, all you need is a white jacket and some sort of check trousers, and you've got, well, and the hat, obviously. But he didn't always wear that, and maybe a wig. but quite a lot of the cosplay is week. There, really. And I know that we had one of the VIP guests at FancyCon last year. We had two VIP guests. One was Billy, and the other one was this chap who came as the Seventh Doctor on the Saturday. And he had a fab costume.
Billy Kirkbride?
No, Kirkbride came as himself. Oh, God. Right. .co.uk. What is it, Kirby?
We love having you back on. Have you noticed?
What?
I said, what is it, Kirby?
Whowon.co.uk?
The first time we've actually come in useful.
Whowon.co.uk?
There's some new stuff coming out available good. At whowon.co.uk, including...
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Shut up.
Yeah, who was?
Enlightenment audiobook. It's Stephen Pacey reads his intriguing novelization of the Fifth Pacey. Doctor story.
Stephen Pacey.
Tarrant in Blake Seven.
And talking of Blake Seven, that's available on BritBox as well. 2021 annual, still there. Intrigued to see what's in it, but I don't. Not that's not a bad price though. £7.99 for 84 pages, I have to say. Time Apart, which is a Fifth Doctor Big Finish story on CD. I suspect you can probably download it as well if you use that particular medium. Robots 2, which is it says during the events of Doctor Who Revenus 2, Liv Schenker leaves the Doctor and the TARDIS behind.
Nicola
just
Walker.
For 1 year. A year during which she would live on Kaldor and get to know her sister Tula all over again. The Smuggler's audiobook is read by Annika Wills.
Who does that nice cover for that? Who does that?
And as...
You know Adam?
Pardon?
Who Alistair does Pearson? That nice cover for the Smugglers?
Is it Alistair Pearson?
Yep.
And
nice cover.
As Robert segued earlier on, Fury from the Deep, DVD. Three discs in there, so I suppose that's not too... What do you, £18.99 for something that hasn't... Oh, actually, the Fury from the Deep one's all right, isn't it? You weren't talking about that. You were talking about the Macrodera one, which is not very good. Is that right?
No, Fury from the Deep.
No, I was talking about Fury from the Deep.
Don't talk about it.
No, that's what he was talking about.
No, that's what it is, yeah.
Oh, so the animation's crap on that, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, not as up to standard as the others.
Okay. Well, some of the
you look at the arms in it. When you look at the arms, they look so ridiculous.
You've got a thing about those arms, haven't you, Robert?
Well, if you look at it, you
kind of draws the
understand.
Eye. So there you go. You know, if it draws the eye, then
so look at the eyes. Look at the eyes. Not around the eyes. Look into the eyes.
You're under. You know what? Sin they committed. They've made the doctor's eyes green. The doctor's eyes are green in it. Doctor's eyes are not green, they are blue.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV cartoon representation.
Nice addendum.
Flying Dutchman and Displaced is a pre-order Big Finish story with the Seventh Doctor. And also on pre-order is Graham, the little 5.5 posing action figure. And Missy 2.
What did I pre-order? I pre-ordered a Big Finish. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, dear. Mistress of Chaos, a paperback, and the Reconnaissance Dalek, of which I have the Funko version up on my mantelpiece. So lots and lots of good stuff you can get for your Doctor Who fan loved one, along with the pre-order of the 13th Doctor with red T-shirt at whowon.co.uk. Next week.
I pre-ordered the story that... River meets 10 again. I can't remember the story.
Next week we'll be discussing Delta and the Bannermen, which are, I do believe the next two Doctor Who stories are three-parters.
There's just three episodes to that one.
That's all right.
And yes, that shouldn't be too hard for everybody to
believe
to
that
watch.
From now on it's almost always three episodes, isn't it?
No.
Three episodes is too many.
Two fours and two threes in each series.
Two episodes and two lots of three.
That's basically what I said, Robert. I will say that I've got an ominous start to the week for tomorrow. I have an envelope here from the hospital containing something
colonoscopy.
Called Picolax. because I've got another bit of paper that says off.
Oh no, Adam, make sure you've got fresh lemon and have a slice of that ready to suck as soon as you've had that stuff. That stuff's horrible.
Pickleaxe bowel preparation.
Makes you go to the toilet.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I'm quite aware it will make me go to the toilet. That's
apparently
the idea.
It's lemon flavour, but I'd suggest having fresh lemon.
No, it's not really, is it? No.
Oh, yes. God. I've got to have an endoscopy on Tuesday. And,
I've had plenty of them.
I'm not really looking forward to it, to be fair. But anyway, so I was quite curious to know. Yes, I'm going to take this stuff. Yes, it will make me go to the toilet. And yes, I've got to sit on the toilet, I've been advised. Have I got to sit on it for 8 hours? Because I've got to take a course at 1:30.
No. You get
no.
It sort of happens after you've had a little bit of it, and then you've got to pretty much stay there.
Just
because
make sure the way is clear. Yeah. Make sure the way is clear, but you don't have to sit on it.
Yeah. Because when it comes,
the 20 megabytes.
There's no holding it.
The laboratory podcast.
No, exactly.
It's hard to hold it. Yeah.
I don't intend to hold it.
That's what she said.
I was waiting for that.
I've got three doses. Shush. I've got three doses. One's at 2, one's at 6, and then the following one is at 8 o'clock the next morning.
You won't have anything left by then, but they just like you to do it in case.
I think you'll be dry by then.
But it works. It works better than doing it all at once.
Yeah.
Oh, duh. And then I've got... then I've got to go up to the hospital and spend 2 hours lying on my... side.
I'm sure our listeners are absolutely riveted.
I won't be.
Absolutely.
It's an important thing.
It shouldn't take 2 hours.
No, they said the treatment would I'll go in there and they get me ready, and then actual treatment take about 10 minutes, but the preparation for it, taking the being sedated, is it?
My sedative didn't work until after the procedure. So getting home was interesting.
Yeah,
Set a give.
I like that.
The only benefit is I get a couple of days off work.
That's what people say when they start this show.
Oh, getting some sympathy. Lorinick says, bless you, Adam, get out the chamber pot. Oh dear, at least I'm probably on one of the days in which I'm recovering, which will be Wednesday. I'll probably actually be able to get to watch Delta and the Bannermen. Unless anybody else has got anything else to say, what I'm going to do now is go upstairs, have a bath, come down and watch Murder on CCTV. And Lydian Robbins says, what is the black and white picture above your fireplace you never answered?
You didn't. Yeah,
I asked you first.
Yes,
you never
went to it. Yes.
What black and white picture?
The one on your fireplace.
Yeah, right over your fireplace.
Yeah.
Where you are, right next to you.
You mean under it? Oh, you mean what?
To the left of you.
What, to my left?
The picture over the fireplace.
It's a black and white picture.
I've got a television over the fireplace. I don't know what you're talking about. I'll turn my doodah. Hang on. I'd better move that.
It might not be a photograph. I mean, it might not be a
right, here we go.
Fireplace.
Are we talking about... Here we go. Can anyone see the screen? Are we talking about the picture that's... hang on. Where's my finger? It's over there. This picture here? It's not black and white. It's colour, but... Is this the one you're on about? Hello? Anybody there?
Yes.
You're looking in the right direction.
Well, it's not black and white. That's what confused me for starters.
Well, it looks black and white when you hand across it.
Well, it's a picture
from your 3D picture that you posted.
It wasn't 3D. It was panorama. Just a panorama.
Panorama, whatever. Right, it looks black and white to me.
I will be cross, though, if I can't get it back on the wall.
We're not looking at the little one.
Here
not
it,
the little one.
No, right. No, there it is.
Above.
There it
above.
Is.
The big one.
The big one. Above the big one.
The big
this one.
The poster.
It's
the
huge.
Oh my god.
Fireplace.
I haven't got a bloody poster. What's this one you mean?
Not that little one of four people, but there's a
up
above it.
Were you talking about the calendar? What are you on about?
I don't know.
I don't know. That's why it's the question.
I'm going to have to look at the panorama now, because you're really confusing me.
There's a picture of someone drinking a glass of something.
Yeah.
No, that's not
oh,
the
you silly
you're
people.
Not the one. It's
you
not
are
the
so
one.
Silly. Right, can I explain what that is? Well, my television was on when I did that panorama, so it's just the TV.
Ah, that's a TV.
That's a TV.
Oh, so it's a
TV. Okay. Yeah,
I was watching something that was in black and white.
Folks, for another mystery.
That's why we're all so confused.
I think it might have been a documentary about Brigitte Bardot.
Okay. That's your TV screen above your fireplace, then.
Well, that's 3 minutes of my life I won't get back, isn't it? Thank you, Terry Miles. Terry Miles said it's the TV they were talking about. Yes, that's my telly.
Okay, which happens
like a picture.
I don't know how well that's going to work in audio, but I suppose we'll have to leave it in. Anyway, so...
So that's the picture that we wanted to know about. Turns out
it's just my telly.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
By the way, the fact that I was doing the panorama at the time, it was probably showing about 3 or 4 different pictures as I was moving around anyway, because it was, you know. Because
the thing is that Debbie's been in that room. She should have told us that. Unless
she didn't, the TV wasn't there then.
It wasn't.
No. Anyway.
I may have been in that room, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Was that a complete panorama too? Because I was looking at there was like a blank area.
Yeah, there's a blank area.
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of the walls.
That's
anyway.
Where nobody goes.
Yeah, well, Debbie hasn't been in the house since we installed the riffraff filter, which is now on the front door.
Yeah, I'm not allowed in anymore.
So, anyway. Adam, you should look at your own panorama and see what it is you captured there.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Brigitte Bardot's thingy on this program on Sky Arts called Discover, and the first one of the series, this 11th series, is about Brigitte Bardot, and I'm pretty sure I was watching that when, because that's probably the last black and white thing I've watched. Very good series on Sky Arts, which is about discovering various Hollywood actors over the years. Very, really good show. But anyway, so next week
we have digressed what? Big time.
Yes. What was it again?
What?
Oh God!
Discover.
What kind of a show?
It's a documentary series about Hollywood actors.
Oh, he's googling it.
Now what is the show's name?
The one that was on was Discover Brigitte Bardot.
Okay.
Discover- Brigitte Bardot. Laurie Nick says, other people look for ghosts in the background. There'll be one here in a minute if I can't bloody finish the show.
Look for her name, Brigitte Bardot.
What she spotted?
Well, there's. Fortunately, Willie 5 has still got a Dalek's eye between his legs, which is still rather inappropriate. And we've welcome to the family here at the 20 Megabyte Towers, Percy Pig. He's there, so I'd like to welcome Percy.
Yeah, I saw your all the pigs.
And if you're talking about the TikTok, the big star of that particular film, the main Percy Pig who comes in with the face mask on, is this one. So there you go. We have a TikTok star in the room, as well as me, of course. Well, right, can I finish TikTok the show star. Now? I want to watch Blimey and Murder on CCTV.
We've digressed rather big time here.
Kirby.
Yes.
TikTok's not going to last long over there, though, is it?
No, it's been renewed.
Oh.
Anyway,
Laurie Nick says Piggy. I don't know if she's referring to me or Percy over there.
Percy, I think. Piggy.
So, anyway, thanks for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Do please join us next time, especially Mrs. Sick Note. Until then, goodbye.
Send emails to?
Never mind that.
Or feedback.
Never mind that.
It says, you normally do the email.
It says that on the graphic. Goodbye.
They can't see that on the podcast, though, can they, if they listen to it?
Well, they'll have to listen to one of the other 466 of them. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye-bye.
Scarecrow. Bye. Build high for happiness.
This is Andrew Cartmell, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.